Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Fighting Mad Edition, after a 23-7 loss in Jacksonville. Coming up, we'll hear from A.J. Green on what caused him to flip out, as one of the classiest athletes in pro sports was ejected for fighting with Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey. We'll get Dave Lapham's take on the fight and the Bengals' lopsided loss. And since the entire podcast can't be a downer, we'll do fun facts with a Bengals rookie who is the son of a five-time Pro Bowler. All of that plus radio replays. But first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the GPS navigation device. Yes, I'm old enough to have used a map for directions, and that wasn't all that bad. But then you had to fold the map back up, which was impossible, at least for me. Let's get to the game. The Jaguars did not have their great rookie running back, Leonard Fournette, who was inactive for the game for violating a team rule. Well, you wouldn't have known it from watching Jacksonville march up and down the field like a mid-2000s Tony La Russa marching from the dugout to the mound for his 47 nightly visits. The Jags opened the game by driving from their 25 to the Bengals' 20, but they didn't score thanks to something that hadn't happened since week 5 last year.
Wide receiver goes in motion in front of the quarterback. They fake a pitch, and Chris Smith blows up the play and makes the tackle at the 25-yard line.
Ball's out, isn't it? They're signaling Bengals
yes,
football. That
the
was a
Bengals
fumble.
Have the football.
Yeah,
Chris Smith against his former team.
Smith forced it. Sean Williams recovered it. And hallelujah. The Bengals' no fumble recovery streak is over after 18 games. A new NFL record. The Bengals quickly punted it back to the Jags, who drove it right down the field again and almost turned it over again.
Bortles back to throw. His
Pick
pass
it.
Deflected.
Yeah. Oh,
and it should have been intercepted by Sean Williams at the goal line. The easiest interception he will ever have. It was deflected right to him, floating into his midsection, and he flat out dropped it like it was covered with butter.
Okay, the analogy was a little harsh, but accurate. Jacksonville kicked a field goal to take a 3-0 lead after the first quarter. The Jags opened the second quarter with a 15-play, 96-yard drive that took roughly 8 minutes off the clock. I'm pretty sure I still had hair when it started. Here's Blake Bortles on third and goal from the 3.
Catches the shotgun snap, throws a slant, caught for a touchdown by Marquise Lee.
On that drive alone, the Jags had 4 third down conversions, all on 3rd and 4 or shorter. In the first half, Jacksonville was 9-for-11 on third down. For the game, the Jags were 12-for-18. Here's George Iloka.
Everybody has to check their effort on film. Everybody has to check the execution. And every man got to look themselves in the eye and look themselves in the mirror, so to say, and see what they could have done better to help this team, because obviously it wasn't good enough. Because on third down, it was a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And so that's why they're converting, and that's going to kill you in this league no matter who you play.
At that point, the score was 10-0. The Jags had run 34 plays. The Bengals had run 10. But Cincinnati came to life.
Dalton drops straight back to throw. Fires down the middle of the field. A leaping catch by the tight end.
Come on, Tyler!
And Croft escapes. He's running to the Jacksonville 40, the 30, the 25. He'll be tackled at the 20-yard line by Paul Posluszny. Andy Dalton delivering a good throw over the middle. Croft broke a tackle, and he turns it into a 57-yard gain.
Croft's catch was followed by 3 straight touches for Joe Mixon. A 10-yard pass, a 2-yard run, and this 7-yard run.
Dalton with a zone read handoff.
Get
this in. Is Mixon.
Get in.
Inside
yeah.
the 5.
Yeah.
Dive for the pylon.
Beauty.
And hits it for the Bengals touchdown.
But that 80-yard touchdown drive was it for the Bengals offense. On their other 8 drives, not including a kneel down on the final play, the Bengals ran 32 plays for 68 yards. That's an abysmal 2.1 yards per snap. For the game, the Bengals had 148 yards of offense, their third lowest total ever under Marvin Lewis. Jacksonville was dead last in the NFL at stopping the run going into the game, but held Cincinnati to 29 rushing yards on 17 carries. Here's Joe Mixon.
We got to execute offensively. We can't keep our defense out there, and we just gotta we gotta find some identity. We're gonna figure it out one way or another. But for the most part, we just gotta keep going to work.
A 56-yard field goal by Josh Lambeau. Now I can see why Green Bay named its field for the Jacksonville kicker. Made it 13-7 late in the half, and then, with 10 seconds left, all heck broke loose. After Jalen Ramsey shoved A.J. Green away from a play, A.J. snapped. He put Ramsey in a headlock, flung him to the ground, and started punching him in the helmet. Now, it was bad enough that he lost his temper, but would famed pianist Vladimir Horowitz have punched a helmet? Or an artist like Vincent van Gogh? No. Come on, AJ. Don't fight to begin with. And don't punch a helmet and risk breaking your hand or wrist. Other players quickly joined the melee, and after the teams were pulled apart, Green and Ramsey were ejected. AJ stood in front of his locker after the game, apologized for his actions, and explained why he blew his top.
I got to control my emotions better. I got to handle my stuff better. Can't put myself in a situation like that to hurt my team and not be able to play.
Is there anything particular on that play that you can share that set it off?
Just like I said, it's halftime. We got like 13 seconds left. You know, we're just running the clock out and turn my back. Just shove me. That's not football, man. If I want to be a real a-hole, I can come cut you every play. I could have come cut you right there, cut you in your knees, and then you would have got mad. But, you know, it's halftime running out. I'm not going to take no cheap shot like that. So, you know, as a man, that's disrespectful. I'm not going to tolerate disrespect like that. And, you know, we can't fight on the field, but, you know, he just got under my skin. You know, I can't let that happen. You know, I've been to Ultimate Pro all this long. I can't let little things like that get to me. So.
Anything ever happened like that before, AJ, at any level to you?
Yeah, I had a couple incidents, but, you know, just take it to the next level. And I shouldn't have reacted that way, man. I apologize to my teammate, you know, Mr. Brown and everybody, because that's not who I am. Just got the best of me today.
Looking back on the call from the referee, do you think the appropriate altercation was given, the appropriate penalty for both players?
No, the ref was, you know, the ref came to me the sideline, and like next time he put his hands to his face, he's gonna call it. And you know, I let it fly a couple plays, and then, you know, it's football. You know, things get a little rough out there. So you know, I didn't mind that. But when you start just trying to take cheap shots when I'm not looking and stuff like that, man, that's when I gotta defend myself, and I'm not gonna back down for anybody. You know, I have a son, and I'm not gonna teach him to. You know, just to back down from anybody like that, man, it's a respect thing. And, you know, I respect all my opponents that I go against. But when it gets to a level when I'm not looking to put myself in danger, then I'm going to have to defend myself.
So it was more the shove than anything he said then, right?
Yeah, just and he was talking the whole game, but I can deal. That's not deal. But like I said, I can come out there with 13 seconds left and just chop you, and that'd be illegal, right? But I'm not trying to get anybody hurt.
He didn't say anything about your family or anything?
No, I don't know. He's talking the whole time. I was just blocking that out. I can handle that.
Do you expect to be suspended?
Like I said, man, I will accept anything that, you know, come my way because I put myself in the situation.
You got hit pretty hard at the end of that whole skirmish. You also punched a helmet. Are you okay? Did you come away with anything?
I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine.
Considering AJ's pristine image in six previous NFL seasons, I'm thinking he gets a hefty fine, but avoids a suspension. But we'll see. The Bengals never threatened in the second half. Lambeau, I love Sly Stallone in those movies, kicked his third field goal to make it 16-7 in the third, and a speedy wide receiver out of the University of Washington, not named John Ross, put the game away with a punt return in the fourth.
Huber's punt, a spiral that slowly turns over. It drives Mickens all the way back to the 36-yard line. Gets through the gunner, running into Bengals territory, flying down to the 40, Uh-oh. Near the sideline at the 30, the 20, the 10. And he dives and somersaults into the end zone for a Jacksonville punt return touchdown.
The final score was 23-7, but other stats truly tell the tale for how lopsided the game was. Total yards, 407 to 148. The time of possession, 40 minutes and 14 seconds to 19 minutes and 46 seconds. That's the biggest disparity in that stat in the NFL this year. And the Bengals ran a grand total of 37 plays. That is the fewest in a game in franchise history. Here's Andy Dalton.
We played their type of game and not ours. And so, you know, that's what they've done all year is they try to hold on to the ball. And they're in a lot of third and short situations, and we were converted on third down. And for us, we were in a lot of third and long situations, and we didn't convert.
At the midway point of the season, the Bengals are 3-5. That was the record after eight games in 2012, and the Bengals went 7-1 in the second half to make the playoffs. But that team could run the ball, as Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, of all people, rushed for 1,000 yards. This year, the Bengals are averaging 72 rushing yards a game and 3.1 per carry. Mixon is on a pace to lead the team with 568 yards for the season. They are not going to turn things around without some semblance of a running game. Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, for a closer look at what went wrong. Jacksonville beat Baltimore 44-7. They beat the Steelers 30-6. The final score in this game wasn't quite as lopsided, but it felt like it. Jacksonville held the ball all day.
They did. They had the ball for over 40 minutes. The Bengals had it for just under 20. So they were 2-1 there. They had the Bengals had 37 snaps. The Jaguars had 78. They were 2-1 there. Third down was the story of the game. The Bengals went 1-for-8, and Jacksonville went 12-for-18. That's the crux of the matter right there. The Bengals were third and long, where they didn't want to be, against a team that can rush the passer like this. And the Jaguars got in third and manageable situations and converted a ton of them to stay on the football field and basically wore the Bengals down.
At some point this year, if the Bengals want to be successful, they need to run the ball. I mean, that's just bottom line fact. And against the NFL's last place team in terms of stopping the run on Sunday, they could not do it.
You know, exactly. You know, and you wonder, I mean, do you change scheme? Do you change personnel? Do you change both? I mean, you got to change something. I mean, it just keeps, same thing keeps happening week after week after week. And the old definition of insanity is do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. So I don't think you can continue to do the same thing over and over again. Whatever it is, there has to be some change and some differential in whatever it is, the process or the scheme or the technique or the personnel or a combination of all of it. But something has to change, because right now it's just flat out not happening.
If you had handed me a roster prior to the game and said pick out the guy of the 53 that's going to get ejected for a fight, A.J. Green might have been my last pick, maybe not the kicker or punter, but aside from that, might have been A.J. Green. So uncharacteristic to see him flip the way he did and go after it with Jalen Ramsey.
I guess Jalen Ramsey was an idiot, to say the least, according to things I'm hearing. He had a lot to say from the very beginning. You know, he tries to talk to people all the time anyway. Extra hits on A.J., trying to intimidate him, trying to punk him. And, you know, one thing, another thing A.J. is, on top of a great guy, is prideful. And it just took him over the edge. And what unfolded, you know, you can't condone. I'm sure after the fact A.J. isn't happy about it. But and I'll tell you, the thing that bothered me was the free shot that Miles Jack took on that, running 40 yards at A.J. Green and taking a shot at the backside of him, the back of his body. I mean, there could have been career-ending damage there, not just season-ending. And I just honestly, I blame the officials, you know, because they're out there, they're listening, they're hearing everything that's going on, and they let it get out of control. And as a result, it bubbled over into what happened there, and it shouldn't have happened. I mean, the officials got to take better control in a more timely fashion, and that was supposed to be a big point of emphasis. You know, no taunting, no trash talking. Well, obviously, it certainly wasn't emphasized enough in this football game.
Up next for the Bengals, the second of three straight road games as they head to Tennessee next Sunday. The Titans are 5-3 after beating the Ravens by a field goal. I'd like the Bengals' chances big time against the University of Tennessee, but the Titans are going to be a handful. Enough on the Jacksonville game. Time for the latest fun facts segment as we visit with a Bengals rookie who is the son of one of the NFL's best linebackers in the 1990s. Time for some fun facts with rookie linebacker Hardy Nickerson. And your dad, Hardy Nickerson, also played in the NFL in a big time way. 16 years, 5 Pro Bowl appearances. What's it been like for you to have a name that means so much to football fans your entire life?
You know, grew up always loving football, watching my dad play. So it was just always something I wanted to do. It was my, you know, it was my lifelong dream to play in the NFL. So that's what I've been working for my whole life. And, you know, he's been such a big help over my whole career from Pop Warner ball all the way up. So, you know, it's been great.
You were born about midway through his NFL career. Mm-hmm. So he was still playing up until you were 9 years old. What kind of memories do you have from being around his teams as a kid?
Oh, a lot of memories. I remember back in Tampa going to practices, Jacksonville going to practices and games, and then also in Green Bay. So, you know, I have some vivid memories of him playing. We still have some old highlights of him in the house. Sometimes I'll pop it in and watch it. No, it was awesome growing up, you know, playing with him on the video games and all that stuff.
How often did you guys move around when you were young?
Oh, shoot. Well, during the season, we always lived where we were playing, and then we would move back to California. So I probably moved about 15 to 20 times, going all to different types of schools. But it was my norm, so I got used to it. And you know, now it's kind of easy making transitions, going to college and then coming here.
We're visiting with Hardy Nickerson. The first time I interviewed you in training camp, I referred to you as Hardy Nickerson Jr., which I've seen often in print, but that's inaccurate, correct?
Correct. We have different middle names. So my grandfather, who passed away in 97, he had his middle name was Otto. My dad's middle or my his name his middle name was James. My dad's middle name is Otto, and mine is William Lindsay. So, you know, they call me Junior. It doesn't bother me. A lot of my dad's friends call me Junior. A lot of coaches call me Junior. So, you know, I kind of go by Junior in a way, but I'm not technically a junior.
I've seen H2 as well.
Oh, yeah. H2 is kind of – that's what my family and close friends call me. If y'all want to call me that, it's fine. You know, it's kind of my nickname.
We're visiting with Hardy Nickerson. Your dad is the defensive coordinator now at Illinois, and you transferred last year from Cal to Illinois to play for him. I know he had also coached you in high school, but how much did you two guys enjoy last year, him coaching, you playing at the highest level of college football?
Oh, it was awesome. That's why I made my decision to go over there, not only to do that and then also get a master's, but to just share my senior year with him was awesome. He had been in Florida 2 years before that, so he hadn't been to pretty much any of my college games when I was at Cal. So it was awesome just getting over there, getting to be coached by him, learning so much before coming here, and then also, you know, being around my family, my sisters being able to get to the games and see mom and dad, and then it was just awesome.
You mentioned working on your master's last year at Illinois. You got a degree in legal studies from Cal. You were all academic, earned honors a couple of times in the Pac-12. So it sounds like education is very important in your family.
Very important. Everybody in my family has graduated college. My mom, she got her master's from Cal in education. My sister, my older sister, Ashley, she's in law school. And my twin sister just finished her master's in fine art from Parsons in New York. So, you know, I have one more class to finish my master's, which I'll probably do this off season. So, you know, they're harping on me now. Make sure you're signing up. So I got to get it done.
We're doing Fun Facts with Hardy Nickerson. Aside from sports, what were some of the things you were interested in growing up?
Oh, man, everything. Movies, video games, mainly just hanging out with family and friends. You know, just spending that quality time, you know, my family, especially my immediate family is very close. So just, you know, always hanging out with them.
Speaking of movies, I read somewhere that your favorites are Godfather 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So we have something in common. Is that one of those things that whenever it's on TV, you can't stop? I mean, you're going around the horn and you see a Godfather movie and you're locked in for a while?
You know, it's funny you say that because last week I was flipping through the channels about 8 o'clock. And we had just got out of practice, but on AMC they always have them running. So I looked and I saw it was Godfather Part 2. I just sat there and watched 3 hours. And I'm like, even though I knew what was going on, I'm still watching and seeing new things. And, you know, it's just a great picture.
Fredo, you broke my heart.
Yeah.
I see that you also consider yourself a foodie with some skill as a cook. What is your go-to dish if you're trying to impress somebody?
Ooh, I can cook anything. Probably my favorite dish that I make is steaks, but I could throw down. anything, spaghetti, chili, Mexican food, anything.
For visiting with Hardy Nickerson, aside from your dad, who were your favorite athletes growing up?
Wow. I'd say probably Kobe Bryant. And then in football, probably Urlacher and Ray Lewis, those guys.
So you signed with the Bengals as a college free agent after the draft. And I've heard that you turned down more lucrative offers elsewhere to sign with Cincinnati. Was that the case? And if so, why?
Well, right after the draft, I was getting a lot of calls trying to get me to go different places. And Coach Hazlitt actually called my house phone. I haven't heard our house phone ring in years.
You still have one.
And, you know, I had my phone ringing off the hook, my dad's phone. Somehow his phone was ringing. My agent's phones were ringing. So, you know, I'm on calls. And then my mom comes downstairs with the house phone. And she's like, hey, I think you need to take this as Coach Hazlitt. She recognized the name because he was a head coach back in the day. So I took the call, and me and Coach Hazlitt had talked at the combine. So, you know, we had a good meeting at the combine. And then he was like, man, you need to come over here. We got a good thing going. You know, you fit our scheme. And then it just made sense.
In training camp, very early on, it was obvious that you understood the defense. You could make the calls as well as pretty much any of the veterans. Was that from study, or is that from a lifetime of being around the game?
I think going to Illinois this past year and being around pro-style coaches and understanding the installs helped me a lot, but coming in here, it was even more. I think, you know, every day we're putting in about 10 blitzes, so it was just going to my hotel room each night, studying it, drawing it out, sometimes even making the calls out loud in my room, like, all right, right, you know, setting the fronts and all that stuff. But it's a Mike linebacker's job to, you know, make sure everything goes well pre-snap so we can get our defense in the best situation possible.
You were a captain at Cal. Then you transfer to play your last year at Illinois, and they name you a captain, which is remarkable to me. Did that surprise you that even though you had not been around those guys for very long, they thought of you as a captain?
Oh, yeah. And so when I decided to transfer, I still had to do summer class at Cal to finish. So I wasn't at Illinois until probably middle of July. And because of the NCAA rules, I couldn't even work out with the team. So I didn't start with the team till August. So I was thinking, you know, I'll probably be like a voted a captain maybe halfway through the year, just because I hadn't been around the guys. But I went in there, you know, just be myself and, you know, just making the calls like and trying to do everything the right way. It was an honor.
Last thing for Hardy Nickerson. We're about a third of the way into your rookie year. What's the big takeaway so far? What stands out about being an NFL player for you?
Yeah, just there's so much emphasis on details at this level. One wrong step or one misread can get you out of position. So it's really all about studying and knowing what you're supposed to do and being confident in it, because when you go out there, it happens very fast. And, you know, in one step, whether it's special teams or defense, you can either make the play or you can be out of position. So, you know, that's the biggest thing I've learned is the recovery, in terms of recovering from a misstep or a false movement, is very slim at this level.
NFL linebacker, chef, and Godfather fan, Hardy Nickerson. Appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. We won't have a midweek edition this week due to scheduling issues, but we will return next Sunday night after the Bengals-Titans game. And if you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and do me a favor and give it a rating or leave a comment. It's always great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.